Today I'm excited to have the boys on board. When I say the boys, I'm talking about Dr. Mac, Chris McClellan and Dan Conn. We're talking about trainers. What do you need to know? Have a listen. Let's go.
Welcome to the Body Science Podcast, bringing you everything you need, want and should know about health, fitness, nutrition and training. As always, the information contained in this podcast is for the information purposes only and is not designed to diagnose or be prescriptive to treat, prevent or manage any injury, disease or other health-related condition. This podcast is brought to you by Hydroxy Burn Shred. Get in the fat burning zone, both physically and mentally, with this potent combination of thermogenic fat burners and mood boosting nootropic ingredients. Scientifically designed to help you reach your weight loss goals, destroy stubborn fat cells, speed metabolism, boost energy, and improve your mood. With an industry leading 4 grams of acetyl L-carnitine plus green tea extract, guarana, and hydroxy citric acid, Hydroxy Burn Shred will take your training and weight loss journey to a whole new level.
Welcome to Body Science HQ. We've got the man himself, DC, in the house. But before we talk about DC, let's talk about the king of the fitness industry.
Thank you.
Professor of sports science, is that right? What are you actually a professor in?
I'm a professor in exercise and sports science.
Conditioning. Yep. So look, we've got the boys in here town. There's a little bit of chat going on like you just heard because these two have actually had some elite sport association. Let's rip in. How do you two know each other?
Goes a long way back. I remember first coming to the Gold Coast Titans. I was a young 19-year-old and I saw this very powerful looking young human, bald head.
And then I walked in.
And I thought, wow, this is what it, you know, that's the sort of frame you need to have to play in the NRL. And that's when I actually realised he's only a trainer. He wasn't actually a player.
Yeah.
But no, me and Macca have got along very, very well over the years and we are best mates. But we've also helped each other in many, many ways. He's helped me a lot in terms of learning and probably understanding the health and fitness, sports science and all the little things that a lot of people don't know much about. I always refer to Macca because he is like a living dictionary, as we all know.
Maccapedia.
Plenty of history.
Yeah, we go way back. And I can remember in the early days of the Titans, we were training out of a shed at Runaway Bay and it was a bit of a sauna and there wasn't a whole lot of room to move. But and you know what? You find when you work in that environment, when you deal with guys on a day, we spend a lot of time together, don't we, in that team environment. Yeah. You see them every day. It's like 46 weeks of the year round. You know, you're on planes with them, hotels, and you know, it's a great thing to be part of that team environment. And yeah, you find that there's lots of personalities that you meet throughout your career as a player and as a coach, and there's sometimes you just click, don't you, with different blokes, and yeah, and you end up, you know, I maintain really good relationships with a lot of the players that have come through, you know, different teams that I've been involved with. And you know, you find that some guys have got similar interests, like, you know, DC's obviously got massive interests within the health and fitness industry and has kicked on unbelievably well with all of that. We talk all the time, mate, don't we? Yeah. Like every week at least once.
And easy now,
you know, yeah, we, you know, bounce ideas off each other around, yeah, different things. And you know, whether it's something that I, you know, maybe it's a little bit technical that I might have a little bit of understanding about, or you know, how we can apply that, you know, with different things that DC's doing. So you know, it's really good to be able to continue to maintain those relationships forever, really, isn't it?
Yeah,
it's really cool. And so that's where, and you see this. I see guys come into that environment, probably less so. Well, some guys love to train. You know, some guys love their training, and then you got other
How
guys.
How was DC as a trainer? Let's be honest.
No, he trained hard, mate. Did he? Dude, train your ass off. Yeah, he loved it. You know,
I remember.
He asked a lot of whys, though.
He likes a lot of bench. We did a lot of bench, but there's nothing wrong with that, brother.
Mate, I learned that from you.
Hey, 100%.
But I always remember, I used to love asking Macca why we're doing things, and I think that's when I started to realise as a 19-year-old up here, I'm up on the Gold Coast, that, you know, I wanted to know why we're doing this. And then when we're doing certain drills for 3-minute periods, that's when usually you get a break in play and why we're doing this. So I used to love quizzing Macca on it, you know, and also the training, why we're doing this movement with this movement with this. And I think that's when I started to really enjoy the stuff that Macca was doing, and that portrayed onto the next clubs I went to, because I asked them a lot more questions and not pumping your tires up, I actually got better answers off Macca because it made a lot more sense. You know, they'd say, oh, we're doing this because, you know, we've done this for the last 5 years, yeah, 10 exactly. years, instead of we're doing this so
pull
we
that
can
spreadsheet out again from last year.
Yeah, exactly. We do the same pre-season as last year. Here's the booklet. There you go. There's your structure. Yeah. With the doc, so with Chris, yeah, I learn a lot more about myself and how I can be a better athlete as well. And also that's portrayed on to how I can help other people be better athletes as well. So that's it's been a really good fit.
Yeah, and that's a big part of it. I mean, as an essence strength conditioning coach, you want players to be engaged. You want them to ask questions. Some don't care, mate. Some just want to rock up, do what they're asked to do, go home. You know, training is the least on their mind. Yeah. They want to play footy, and that's fine. Then you've got other guys, as I was saying, who like the process, who enjoy the process of understanding, well, how does this help me get better? And at the evolution of strength conditioning, it's come a really long way, actually, in the last decade in particular. For many, many years, there was a whole lot of stuff done because it had always been done. A lot of slugfest, don't give them a drink break for 2 hours, all this garbage, that had been done for quite a long time. And we would talk about intervals, and if you look at a game like rugby league, it is, it's a high intensity game. It's got an endurance base. You need to be conditioned. You need to have the level of fitness, but you've got to be able to do repeated high intensity efforts, and you've got to belt people, and you've got to be able to take a hit. That's a big thing. We remember that time we did that Fight Club, a couple of things we did. I used to like putting one of the things for me I like, and DC, he excelled at it, and a few boys love it and a few boys didn't love it, but I find a lot of boys come into the environment and I don't know, they think they want to be UFC fighters or something like that, or cage fighters or whatever. But I find one of the things of having worked in a few different sports, I can say this from an educated perspective, rugby league is the toughest game on the planet by a really, really long way. And I mean that physically. And if for anyone who ever gets the chance to go into a dressing room after a game, if you go into an AFL change room after a game, and this is not to belittle AFL, it's a great game, tough game, all that sort of thing, but it's a different game.
Yeah.
It's heavily based on high-speed running meters and things like that. You go into a rugby league dressing room and it's triage. Boys are beaten up.
Literally.
And so one of the things I like to do, and we did a lot of it, is, you put guys under pressure, and that's physically. So, you play hard, you train hard. We all shake hands at the end of the day, but you can find out a lot about people when you put them under the pump. Leaders start to lead. I always say my little thing on leadership is it's got nothing to do with leadership skills and everything to do with being followed. And so it's about setting training examples, setting examples on the field. And, you think about guys you've played with, there'll be blokes that you'd run into a wall for them, and so that's part of the whole process. And
I had a couple of shit halfbacks when I played too.
Well, I mean, there's a few fighting around that play in a dinner suit, and you kind of have to encourage them, maybe get in the way every now and then. It's a great environment, and I remember Danny's 19-year-old had come out of the Bulldogs system. Physically. And again, not pumping his tyres up, but physically, you're a unit at 19. You're well developed physically.
I think that was the Bulldogs era where there was Mark O'Mealy, Steve Price, Sonny B. Williams. I came out of there.
Coming into that system, you were eligible probably to play 20s back then, mate. I can't even remember whether you had 20s. You spent no time in that. I mean, you stayed in the top squad and played in the NRL and that sort of thing. So, and you can tell, mate. You can just tell when certain guys again have a common interest in their training. And we come back, coming back around to the fact that ask questions about what we're doing on a day-to-day basis, and I'm wrapped. If I've got guys asking me why are we doing this, and I can say, well, this is why we're doing it, happy days. And that's just a process that we really look for.
So you mentioned a lot of change in training over the last 10 years, like S&C. What type of things have changed?
Well, the game's evolved, mate. Things change, like the interchange rules change, different rule changes. The game evolves with strategies, like the wrestle had come in and that's evolved the game around rule changes and again the interchange and things like that. So what you need to physically be able to do changes with that. For example, back in the day, you remember Super League days when there was unlimited interchange? It was basically run on, run off, right? Yeah. You could run around at 125 kilos, big boppers,
slog blokes,
and absolutely. And it was just a power game 101, right? So that changes. You can't run around. You think about how many guys now in the NRL at 120 kilos plus. There's not very many who do big minutes. There's still some big units, don't get me wrong, floating around, but they're not playing 70 minutes.
Effectively, that's right.
And so we have to prep them for that. So whether it's what we probably consider traditional fitness training or aerobic fitness versus that repeated sprint, we call it repeated sprint ability, or that repeated bout effect to be able to back-to-back do high-intensity efforts. And you train by replicating that on the training training field. So, you know, back-to-back efforts and good old Malcolms and all these sort of things that we do, looking at high-intensity intervals time-wise. Because we know, right? You know a set of six goes for a certain period of time, right? When you're defending a set of six in rugby league, you know that you've got 60 seconds or 70 seconds of back-to-back high-intensity efforts. You get the ball, you get a little bit of downtime. And so that's, you know, that's why teams, that's why ball retention is so important. Not for this to be a rugby league lesson, but, you know, if you turn over the ball and don't complete your sets and you keep giving the ball back to teams and you defend all night, yeah, it's a long night, you know, and you run out of gas really quick. And then if you do get the ball, you're so, you're cooked. You can't, yeah, you know, you can't get out of your own way. That's how we train. You know, you have to train to replicate that. And in the gym, you know, you've got to be able to put shots on. You've got to be able to take a shot. And we see them all the time, mate. You know, the classic thing, looks like Tarzan plays like Jane. You know, we see that a lot with guys who have unbelievable physiques but can't get the job done, you know, because they usually get hurt. And one of the things I've found is, you know, guys that run around who are ripped to shreds and look like they've just come off the cover of a magazine, they don't take the bumps necessarily as well as a Marco Mealy or someone like that who may not have the perfect physique but can take the punishment, you know. So it's a bit of a fine art to, you know, balance that out. The thing is, though, and the thing I have to always say to boys is we're not bodybuilders, we're not CrossFitters, we're not anything in between. We've had a podcast on this about keeping the main thing, and our main thing, if it's rugby league, it's rugby league. If it's CrossFit, then it's CrossFit. If it's AFL, then it's AFL. We might do little things here and there. We might go and do a CrossFit session. We might go and do something on the beach, or you've got to mix it up. You've got to have variety or everyone goes stir crazy. But bring it back to how does this make us better? Because if it's not making us any better, you know, what are we doing it for? You know, simple as that. And so they're the questions that we sort of ask, and the professionalism around that, and science has come into it a lot. And
do you reckon science has played like a massive role now to how it's changed?
I think it's informed us a lot, mate. Around just what we know. So the early days
recovery
of the recovery side of it, mate. Yeah. Mainly that, where we can quantify that. And I don't know if you remember, we used to do all the spit tests and stuff at the Titans. And so my PhD was with rugby league players, and we looked at salivary measures, and we would give finger prick blood samples, muscle damage markers and that sort of stuff. So we now know a lot about what the consequences are of a game, so what the physical toll is. And so I published some work years ago now, but one of the things that was most telling was that if you look at muscle damage markers in rugby league, and if you look at a measure called, so creatine kinase is an indirect marker of muscle damage. So it takes 5 full days after a game of NRL to come back to normal.
Is that right? Five days.
5 full days. When you're thinking about travel, turnaround times, if you get a short
Friday night game,
you get a
Origin.
You play Sunday night, you got to play again a Sunday Arvo, you got to play Friday night, you are bashed up.
Don't put your money on the team that played Sunday.
Yeah, and this is what I used to always say. You know, well, there's some teams. Well, here's one for you. There's some teams that play every Friday night, right?
Yeah, I've seen that.
You've seen that, right? There's an interesting trend there. So they go week to week, 7 days in between games, nice and recovered, happy days.
Yeah.
Right. There are other teams that maybe aren't as high on the ladder who get the scraps, who end up, you know, playing in Canberra. Or not there's anything wrong playing in Canberra. Lovely city, Canberra. Love it. gets a bit chilly, but it's a good town.
It does get cold.
It's a good town. You know, you play there on a Sunday, you got to get out of there, you got to play again on the Friday night. If you look at ladder position and turnaround time,
have you studied this?
Just have a look. Yeah, I've spent a lot of time on it.
I'm not getting
there are some trends.
I'm not getting the text messages every Friday saying,
no, I'm not doing it anymore. But when I was working at
footy tips,
well, this is it. So you can put it this way, with a high level of predictability, you can anticipate who's going to be better than who's not going to be very good. Because physically,
Dan Conn's eyes are going everywhere at the moment as he ponders on that.
That's right. Physically, there's a toll. But the science has had a huge amount to do with it. And, you know, and things like GPS came in and accelerometers and stuff like that. So,
mate, is that good for football? Is that good for sport?
I think it is.
It is?
Yeah. I think from a career longevity perspective, I think one of the things we know, and one of the things that there's often some apprehension that there's too much science.
Yeah.
Like, and, you know, let's
can
just,
there really be too much science?
Yeah. Science can get in the way.
Yep.
It's called paralysis by analysis, right?
Yeah, yeah.
If you get too much data and you don't use it, you're wasting your time.
Confuse the shit out of everybody.
It's a waste of time. And that's why one of the things I look at, because there's lots of options out there to monitor people. There's, you know, we can look at spit, blood, breath.
Do they still have those things, Mac, where you can actually have impact as well? How many impacts a game you have?
Yeah. So that's done with accelerometers and things like that. So we can measure those. You can identify all of that information. That's meaningful. That we want to know that, because then we can measure Well, we can correlate how many impacts you've had at a certain level in G-forces. And then what we know is we can then predict how long that's going to take to get over it. And so...
So is the sport supporting that type of analysis or not support?
No. It's team by team. It's not cheap. There's a cost component to that. And you'll find that at the very elite, sharp end of sport, they're all over it. But I don't
think... They're using that in the States? You do a lot in the States.
Oh, so yeah, they... yeah. There's plenty of it going on. Yeah. Okay. The States is a different model though, mate, just because of how, not to get too deep in the reeds with it, but around player representation groups. And there are some questions at the moment. The US are trying to figure it out. Who owns the data? Is it the player's data or is it the team's data or who owns that data? And so that's still something that's being a little bit, it's a work in progress. Australia, we're a really long way ahead, like I would say a decade.
Okay.
Well, this very first stuff that we ever did at the Titans was in 2008, before there was even rules about GPS when we were wearing it. So I published the first stuff back in 2009 on GPS in the game, and the NRL didn't even have a rule on it. And so we went, well, there's no rule, so we're going to do it.
Okay.
We didn't break any rules. They made some rules because of us, but we didn't break any rules.
Yeah.
You know, and that gave us great data around movement patterns.
K's in the game,
impacts. And the units themselves have evolved. So the really early ones, with, again, not to confuse anyone, but they collected data at about 1 or 2 hertz. What that means is you get a data point every second, or if it's 2 hertz, it's 2 data points every second. And you're sprinting, if you're sprinting at 32 kilometers an hour, a data point every second is not much use, because I get a data point when you're standing here, then my next data point, you're 10 meters away.
Yep.
So it's pretty useless. Whereas now we're at, most of those are collecting at about 25 hertz, much more accurate. The accelerometers that give us the G-forces, when we were doing early days, they were at about 16 hertz. They're at 100 hertz now.
Wow.
So they're an accurate device.
That's good data.
Yeah, it's good data, yeah. And the ones they wear in the NFL in the helmets are at a couple of hundred hertz.
Yeah.
Very accurate data around, the quantify the collision. So is that a, so you might look at a hit on TV and you go, man, that's a massive hit. But the actual measure we get may not be that high.
Yeah.
Whereas a guy might come into contact with the ground doesn't have a lot of give in it. And so, you know, this is where we're seeing, you know, with guys hit their head on the ground and things like that.
One punch.
It's a big, big problem, you know. But we can measure that, which is cool.
So, Dan, talking about fitness, the future of fitness, how's technology changing the way we work out?
Working with Samsung or the garments, I guess, has been a big thing, especially with your sleep patterns. Just for the general public, that is, not getting right into the sports science side of things. But, you know, getting the steps is actually encouraging just the masses to get off their butt and actually have something, a goal to work to. Yeah. And then we're seeing this more and more in companies, because as we see big companies, they want to save money on retention. You know, they want to stop trying to employ everybody and they want to keep people in their businesses. So they're trying to make a safer, happier, healthier, fitter workplace, so to speak. They're using the garments a lot and all that sort of technology inside their workplace. And they're tracking, you know, you can track your food, your calories and all that sort of stuff. And with the garments, you can also track, I mean, there's the Samsung garment. If you jump in the pool and you do a stroke, it picks up what actual stroke you're doing. Like all these little things like this. And they're just getting more and more advanced in that sense. So it's a long way from the actual, like the sporting side of things. But for the general masses, it's a great way to keep monitoring.
So there's a heap of money in sport, but there's a lot more money in mainstream fitness.
Yeah.
Can you see the mainstream fitness technology outrunning sport in the future, Mac?
Oh, mate, I think they need to sort of coexist. And if you look at what we're doing, I had this conversation with someone recently, but if you look at what is being done, let's say the last decade in pro sport and the evolution of smart garments and your Fitbits and all this sort of thing, a lot of that technology is born in performance, in high performance.
Yeah.
And so we can look at that and go, well, whether it's the Samsung garments, whatever it might be, and we can track sleep, for example. Sleep's huge, right? Sleep's huge for recovery, huge for well-being, you know, weight loss, all sorts of things. You know, sleep's a really important component of life. And there's lots of gadgets and gizmos that are out there that enable us to track our sleep. Some are more accurate than others, but I think in many respects, it's just that people are committed to trying to track it. You know, the Fitbits, for example, they've copped a bit of heat here and there just with their accuracy, but you sort of look at them and you go, but if there's an inherent error there, it's a consistent error. So the data you get is still gold.
Yeah, exactly.
So let's not, you know, throw the baby out with the bathwater. And so I think there's really... What's wrong? You don't like that one.
Oh,
it's an old one, mate. Come on.
You don't get big picking cherries.
You never get big picking cherries.
Don't throw the baby out the bathwater. Sorry, I didn't even throw you off there, mate.
Mate, you can't fire a cannon from a canoe either. But anyway.
continuity of data, and even though it was off, it still is good data.
Yeah, but and just the transfer across into the mainstream, you know, that people, I think people like gadgets, and everyone's on their phone now, so there's an app for everything, and you can track your steps, you can track all sorts of things. And the garments, I think there's still a cost factor with those. They're still pretty expensive. There's some out there, some of the shirts that we can wear, you know, they're expensive. Mm. And so that makes it a bit of a limiting factor for the general mass.
So is that like the ECG shirts?
Yeah, so there's shirts that do respiration rate, they'll do heart rate, they'll do what's called heart rate variability, which is a measure between, it's called an R wave interval. So it's with your heart rate, and for anyone who's interested in, you know, sort of
just like military
cardiovascular. Sort of a lot of it came out of the military. Yeah. But we have a thing called a QRS complex. So you know when your heart, when you listen to your heartbeat, it goes lub dub, lub dub.
Yeah.
You ever heard that?
Yeah.
Okay, so that's how it is when you listen to it.
How's it going? I just need to hear it.
Lub-dub. Lub-dub.
I can hear Mac is really...
That's it. It's going. You can hear it from here. We can measure the interval between R waves, which is depolarization of your heart, basically, right? One of the things we know when people are, let's say they're stressed or their fitness level isn't particularly high, their heart rate might be high, 90 beats per minute type deal. The variability of their heart rate is low, right? You want a high level of heart rate variability. We can track that, and there's little sensors we can put in our finger, and there's a whole lot of things that can be done. So there's shirts that do that as well.
Yeah, I've heard about these.
So heart rate variability, sweat rate, which is important, respiration rate. There are shirts that do ECG, and a lot of it is born out of military research. We adopt that into high performance, and then it makes its way into the major. It is a trickle down effect that takes a
while.
Can
they test, for example, if you're military and you're under a stressful situation, can they actually test there and then your heart rate and what you can handle in real
100%.
Time? 100%. Yeah, because I got a really good friend, and he's ex-SAS, and he's really, really high up. He's got five brothers in the SAS. Talking about this technology you can wear out in the battlefield, and also picks up where you are. So if you're somewhere in the battlefield, no one can find you. They've got a sensor that can track you. It can see how much stress you're under, if you've been injured.
Yeah.
And I was sitting there thinking, well,
yeah. So the very first, it's a company called Zephyr who were the first to do that. So Zephyr are a vest, and the vest has a number, it's like GPS and a number of other trackables. It's literally a vest that you wear underneath your other uniform for military, for deployment. And so what you can have is remotely you can have another member of the team in a vehicle or at headquarters, and they can be kilometers away, and they can track that in real time. So that really, Zephyr technology is where a lot of the GPS technology came for our performance stuff, and that's why you'll see at professional games like AFL rugby league and that sort of thing, you'll see people on the sideline with a laptop, and you can get that in real time. And so that's how it all evolves.
That's crazy.
It's pretty cool. So with those vests, it's stress markers. So it's heart rate, it's sweat rate, it's heart rate variability, it's all of those measures that enable us to go, okay, he's under the pump. And so in the AFL, we can use that to determine interchange rates. Because you go, get him out of there, he's cooked.
Yeah.
You know. And so it's the same in a military setting, law enforcement, all of those types of scenarios where you can go, look, this is a really high stress situation. And literally, you know, when they got contact with other people, whatever, you know, whether they're shooting at people or whatever it might be, I haven't got the terminology right, but when they've got contact, then you can identify how people respond. That gives you a lot of information. And then the other side of that is the subjective side. So it's the psychology of that, and the, okay, we can measure all of these physiological parameters pretty easily now, very accurately and, you know, very precisely. And then there's another conversation around individual interpretation of that. Yeah. So some people will have those really high heart rates and everything, but on the outside, ice, versus someone who perhaps doesn't tolerate it so well, you know, drops their bundle. And so that's where, I'm not a military expert, but in terms of if you're going to make decisions about who you go into battle with, you want to know how they're going to, you know, tolerate these high stress situations. And it's all measurable.
So is there a correlation with all that sort of stuff, with mental resilience
and what we see physically?
Physical stuff?
I actually think it's trainable. I think that you can certainly improve resilience. But you think about it. I think about, like, if I put into a sporting sort of scenario, I look at individuals who are just tough. Yeah, some blokes, they look like an accountant. You know, they don't have a particularly...
Nate Miles.
Take Nate Miles, for example. He's probably not listening to this, but that's all right. So we're bagging.
Yeah, we're
but you look at a guy who, he's got a dog's body, a massive forehead, champion bloke. But
love him.
But he actually wears a helmet, you know, full time. God bless him. I think it's trainable, but I don't think there's a direct correlation. I think that some individuals will just eat that up. The mental toughness and the mental resilience is you just keep bringing it at me and I'm going to be all right. Versus the individual who drops their bundle psychologically, perhaps, under extreme physical, it could be environmental sort of scenario, physical scenario, and they're like, they just tap out. Get me out of here.
A question that probably mightn't be science related, but do you reckon people are born with a level of mental toughness?
Yes.
Or do you reckon they develop?
Yeah, the old nature versus nurture. I reckon, and again, just my own personal opinion, I think it's a lot more how you're born. Yeah. I think it's a lot
and
more
what you go through.
Yeah, and what you go through is it sort of sends you one way or another.
I totally agree with
I think some people, again, you look at different people that have come into your life or people you've played with or, you know, different scenarios, and you just go, I don't know what it is, but unbreakable, versus some people aren't.
You can just see it in their eyes.
You can just tell. Yeah. That's why I like, you know, footy. That's why I've spent a whole career in football codes with men who belt each other. Like, you know, combat collision type sports, because you can't hide. There's nowhere to hide. You find out a lot about people when they're under the pump.
So just playing on that data aspect where we're at, obviously the army's doing a lot, you said, and sports doing a lot, heading into fitness. So obviously we need to look at concepts. I really want to talk about the future of fitness if we can. And obviously we're going to have like robo trainer in the future. If we get all this technology, if we can recreate technology, we can recreate concepts, and these watches will be our personal trainers.
We'll have a hologram of Macca.
We'll come down to, you know, like the DC Mac app and which one do I like best and that type of thing. What type of things do you think, you know, 10 years time, and obviously you may have come across some of this information in your chats and you can't say certain things, DC, but Mac, from a point of view, science point of view, what type of things are going to dictate what I do on a day based on what I'm wearing or what I'm holding? You guys are doing some serious data in sport, and that everything gets commercialized at some period. If you're a trainer, you've got to wonder in the future. Like,
I mean, I guess from what I've seen happening with certain companies is trying to develop ways to one-on-one coach people live. There's a few apps coming out now. One's about to go to market, which is pretty exciting. It's been picked up by the Australian Athletics Committee, the actual entire Olympic Committee. And you can actually coach one-on-one live, give the people live exercise examples on the screen, and you can coach them one-on-one live up to 6 people, or you can up to 1,000 people. Therefore, you bring in social media.
So they're wearing a headphone or some kind?
No, they're live on your phone, apparatus or computer, whatever it is, set it up in the gym, home, wherever it is. And then you think, well, if you can do that for training, you could probably do that for a social media 2,000, 10,000, 100,000 people session. And then you could do it for an Are You Okay charity session. So there's all these little bits and pieces coming out in technology now where you can coach in a more personalized way. I think that was really interesting because there's a lot of money to be made in that if you get that right. A lot of people have tried to do it. It's not like Facebook Live or anything like that. There's so many different elements to this of what I've seen, and that's going to come out too. And I think that's going to come out really big in the sporting industry, because say, for example, Mac has got 20 guys to coach individually. These guys are all different. Obviously, they've got different attributes and skills and whatever. He can set them a program and go back through and in fast time, look through, make sure they've done their program. So say if you're teaching an RTO course and Mac has got, you know, he teaches courses, he can actually go back through and make sure they've done their prac and done all this sort of live sort of stuff. So it's in that regard, it's changing in that form.
And how much do you think AI will, artificial intelligence, will play a role in that? Because obviously, if we're tracking sleep and we're tracking, what do you say, respiratory type
everything.
Issues, we're tracking sweat, we're tracking. So you get up in the morning, watch, goes, whoa, not a good night. Let's not train this morning. Let's train at your optimal time is 1 o'clock. Like, is that type of shit going to happen soon, or is that where it's
going? We're there. That's already there. Yeah. I think AI is huge, mate. I think and that will continue to evolve. And the hologram thing is not a quantum leap, away from where we are. I think that all of what DC said is absolutely really close. In fact, really close. But also, talk about closing the loop, right? So supplement company, nutrition, training, lifestyle, well-being, all of these things. Whoever can get in front of, and I know it's very topical at the moment.
You look at what Amazon are doing with the way they're reordering. You look at what Facebook are doing with your phone, understands where you are and tells
absolutely
you. You're going 10 minutes to your destination. You go, I didn't fucking tell you where I was going. How do you know I'm going there?
Kind of scary.
But you start putting all that together.
And that's where I think there's, if we look at wearables. So, okay, I've got a wearable technology that gives the device, cloud or whatever it is, certain information information about my physiology, then that can then be automated to influence a whole range of things. What I order that goes into my fridge, you know, so the nutrition component, supplement component, so personalized nutrition, personalized supplementation, the Greg Young version of supplement A versus Chris Mack versus DC. There might be a slight variation of 5% in some of the ingredients. I mean, that's, you know, as well as I do. Well, you're already there with that, you know, and then into training. And then, so, okay, in terms of, there are certainly things at the moment, like the heart rate variability is a big one that identifies, okay, your heart rate variability is high or low, and so you maybe should do less or more today or this, that, and the other thing. The catch with that from a training perspective is, as a trainer, I may or may not want the client to see that, you know what I mean? So, because there are times when it's okay to be tired, it's okay to be fatigued, and we talk about plateaus and we talk about, you know, keeping people progressively overload and getting results. And I say this to a lot of boys, because we've had you always get a few blokes in squads who, Macca, I'm tired, you know, I need a day off, mate. We're not going to do that, are we? You know, we've got fitness today, you know, not mentioning any people, Mark Minicello. Anyway, I love him. He's a good mate of mine, Mini. Yeah, he's a good lad. Mini loves his training, but he also hates his training. But anyway, you know, there's certain information. It's certain times when you want people, and I'll say, it's okay to be tired. We're not playing on Sunday. You know, you're going to get 3 days off, mate. You've got four big days and then you got 3 days off, whatever it might be. And so that's part of individualized training, right? You can't feel $1 million every day of your life. It's not realistic to expect to bounce out of bed every day, right? So I think this is part of an ongoing education that comes in with the technology that says, okay, yep, this is your current status today, but this is why, and that's okay, because we're going to do this today that's going to make you feel better and you're going to be productive in the whole nine yards. And so that goes into corporate health, that goes into reduced sick days in the workplace and productivity and all that stuff that comes into, you know, the corporate sector that is huge.
Yeah.
You know, we talk about all of these elements that, you know, feed into whatever the database is, that then is able to push that out to the individual and make it meaningful. And that's the thing I say to students all the time. Like, if I was doing a presentation here on the sort of data streams that we get on professional athletes now, it's a lot. Like, we'll get 30 to 40 data streams per day per player. Now, that's a lot of information, and you go far out, you know, how do I manage that? And that's where it's really important to identify what's meaningful for Daniel Kahn might not be meaningful for Greg Young or me or whoever, right? So that's where the individualization comes into it. And that's where the garments are going and the apps, and you're able to, because people also want to be part of something. Group fitness, there's a reason that a lot of the group fitness things have been very successful. People want to train in groups. I hate training in a group, but some people love it. We talked about this. Some people, you know, your garage thing, that's you got your little, it's a tribe.
Yeah.
We talk about tribes all the time, right? People want to be part of a tribe.
A cult, it's a tribe.
Yeah, no, it's not a cult. Yeah, it's a tribe. So all of this can lend into, you know, let's say you're training at the local gym and you want to do a workout of some sort. You don't want a PT necessarily, but you may be looking for someone else in the gym right there, right then, at that time, who's interested in doing the same workout. I mean, we're already here with this, and you can locate someone, and they go, you want to do a sprint session or some cross training or whatever it is? And you go, yeah, let's do it, you know? And so that's a really cool component of, you know, where we're heading with this thing.
I was speaking to a group with Garmin and Apple who own all the data. Do you know who owns all the data from the Apple watches? Apple.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, so they can release that and create their own apps to their consumers based on that data. So it's amazing what they can do with that data and how they can justify that to suit certain people. But yeah, I found that really interesting because Garmin, they give all their information away to all their clients and whoever needs it, and the whole world gets to see the analytics on it. Apple withhold that and build apps based around the data, which is really interesting. I thought, well, pretty spooky, because they could say this is what the data was, but we don't know that. But here's an app that's going to make you better.
The Connected Club is where it's all heading. Like, you talked about group training being
really popular. I think that's already happening, mate. Yeah. I think the Connected Clubs are, I mean, I'm not involved in any clubs as such, but, you know, DC's got a few more links within the mainstream commercial fitness industry than I do. But as far as I'm aware, that's happening.
I can tell you from, hand on heart, the variety is the biggest thing. I mean, being involved with F45, Orange Theory, Anytime Fitness, whatever it is, they're, even Anytime Fitness, who is a 24-hour gym, they're trying to bring in that group training aspect. They're all trying to do that sort of stuff. So it's interesting because people, as much as they want a group train, they want variety. Yeah. So that's why when ClassPass came in, it was such a success, because people would go boxing one day, yoga the next, do something else different. So all this variety. So the one-stop shop thing, I think, is going to be something of the future, where you can go there and you can, Macca can jump on the bench press, and Greg, you can go underground every and do day. His dungeon, and I can go and jump on the boxing bag, and packing. Jeez, just
I came out the wrong end of that one, didn't I? I can go down the dungeon.
Down the dungeon.
Nah, there's nothing wrong with that.
But guys, you lift heavy went down the dungeon. Because you like lifting heavy, don't you?
I do like to train heavy, Greg.
How heavy are we talking, Maker?
Mate, I still throw around a fair bit of freight. An old guy, you know, I still lift pretty heavy.
What are you deadlifting at the moment, mate?
I don't go any heavier than about 4 or 5 plates a side. I'll stick with 4 plates a side because I'll blow out my lower back.
Throw it out.
I know, I was just saying I'd do that in my circuit training.
Yeah, I know you do. I like to train heavy. But I train like a bodybuilder. Yeah. I don't train like a powerlifter. I train like a bodybuilder. So I do body parts. I like doing it that way. And
you're a smart guy. Yeah. Why do you train like that? Why do you like that?
Maybe I'm a closet bodybuilder. I like to, I'm all about hypertrophy. I like hypertrophy. My thing is, you know, muscle mass development. You know, I'm doing a lot more in the physique science world these days, you know, comps and comp prep and things like that as well. And when it comes to training for me, and we talk about variety, I don't really need a lot of variety. I'm someone who, I could eat the same thing every day. Every meal, doesn't worry. I'm a pretty simple cat, you know, in that regard. So.
How is Bruce?
He's good. He's killing it. He's way more popular than me.
Get him on at
Dr.
Mac.
The Dr. Mac. Yeah. Brucey, he's a very cool cat.
Yeah.
When you do physique, like, what is it that interests you with physique?
I like specificity of training, right? What I kind of don't, myself personally, I don't necessarily
Is that
like,
a research background?
Nah, I just don't. I think, okay, what are you training? Are you training to, do you just want to work out? You just want to sweat? Or do you want to lose fat? Or do you want to gain muscle mass? What do you really want to do? So if you just want to sweat, right? If you just want to have, you feel like you've had a great workout, got your heart rate up, whatever, right? And a lot of people want that, then you might go and do one of the
group classes
or something, you know? And that's great. And that's, a lot of people like doing that. For me, exercise is like yoga, right? It's my meditation time. I'm not a fan of yogi.
Yeah,
you know that.
I know that. I was wondering where that was going.
And the yogis of the world, full respect, but I have my own perspective on yoga. But anyway.
You actually did some yoga research with an elite team, didn't you?
I did. Cut to the chase. Basically, yoga, like, some claims were made about how effective yoga would be on performance. And I was happy to run with that and collected a whole lot of data. We did a whole lot of yoga and we got better at yoga.
Fantastic.
That's all we got. Yeah. Nothing else. We didn't get better at anything else. So that's fine. Yeah. If you want to get better at yoga, do yoga. If you want to play rugby league, go and play rugby league.
Yeah. Yeah.
Keep the main thing the main thing. So I'm all about, I'll put my headphones in, go to my happy place and train.
Is there music playing through those at the time they're on?
Sometimes. It's just the game face. People leave me alone, you know?
You got headphones on, don't get
I'm not the most approachable looking guy, although I'm very approachable. I'm specificity. So like, if you want to put on muscle mass, you train a certain way. So if you want to get a lot of hypertrophy and put on a lot of muscle mass, don't go and do group fitness. Why? Because you will not necessarily hit whatever the targets are that you need to hit to develop muscle mass. And we did a whole show on that. Same with body fat, right? If you want to lose fat, then you need to achieve certain things in terms of caloric expenditure and heart rate and all that sort of stuff. Now, if you're in a group fitness session that is self-paced, and I'm pro group fitness, don't get me wrong, but for specificity of fat loss, maybe it's not perfect. The more effective ways of losing fat are the high intensity interval work. But again, what I find with people is that a lot of people don't really know how to train.
Mm.
You know, when I say to someone, okay, we're going to do treadmill sprints or something, right? Yeah. Or sled pushes flat out or whatever. They don't necessarily know how to take themselves to the end of the road. And so they might only end up at 90%, but they go, geez, that was hard. I tried really hard. And I'm like, yeah, but you've got petrol left in the tank. You know, when I say 100%, I mean you fall off the bike at the end of it. You know, and for the really effective fat loss with high intensity intervals, you've got to be at 100%. If you're at 80%, it's 3/4 pace and you're not going to get there. So you're better off just turning your legs over at a, 70% of heart rate max and just eat up the calories, So I think it's a balanced thing. And so again, I would say to people, what do you want to do? You know, general health, happy days. You know, go and do exactly that. A boxing session, a yoga session, a group fitness session, a weight session, whatever it might be. Lots of variety. You will feel great. You'll get good workouts. You probably won't necessarily lose a lot of fat. You probably won't put any on. You know, you might not get massive changes in your physique versus if we target a certain type of training to, you know, zone in on fat loss and we'll rip some fat off you. But that, you know, there's a nutrition component to that. And then we, you know, there's another whole conversation around
how it comes back to also your goal setting and what you do to make yourself happier. Is it physique training? Is it group training? Because you're training with mates.
Yep.
So it comes back to, again, the simple version of what makes you happy and how you're going to do it.
Yeah. Because, I mean, there's a big difference between competitive athletes versus people who are doing good things, exercising for their general health.
Yeah. Yeah.
If you're into physique science and you're a physique competitor, well, you're all about, you've got to grow a muscle and lose fat. Hell, that's yeah. different to exactly what you just said. I want to train with my friends. I want to have, and I think it's a good thing, have a social component to it. Mm. You know, get out, get about, you know, get outside, do some different workouts. Like lots. You don't have to be in a gym every day of your life. You know, so you yeah. can mix it up really nicely, particularly in, you know, in this part of the world, the weather's great. You know, lots of good places to train. Go down to Crumbin, smash the stairs, go to the beach, whatever, you know. There's lots of positivity there around that.
I love that, the fact that you've got the masses who we can, you know, set goals for in the world. Wellness space,
yep.
And then you've got the elite where yeah. you can talk to in that language.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And they're very different in terms of what their goals are. And I say to people, like the big thing with training is I say, well, what do you want to do? Well, what don't you want to do? And they'll go, man, I do not want to run on a treadmill. And yeah. I go, well, we're never going to run on a treadmill then. You know, we're going to do something else, you know?
I like that.
Because if you say to people, if
what do you want to do?
Yeah, because yeah, if you just go, nah, sorry, the only thing you're going to be able to do is treadmill, they're not going to do that.
Yeah.
You know, it's boring, right? You know, you just mix it up. Spin sessions, you know, you do your different type of group fitness, and there's a few of those about now. Yeah, that's good stuff. I think as long as they're doing something, you're in good shape. But again, the different group sort of in the physique competitive world, the bodybuilders and the, you know, the bikini competitors and that sort of thing, they're all about the physical component of fat loss and muscle mass. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And you're judged on it. So that, you know.
Yeah, exactly. You're not going to get there if you haven't put it in.
Well, that's right.
Heard you say the hammies are the new glutes. Mate,
yeah, man.
I've been working on my hammies.
Yeah.
Flat out.
Hammies are... So in the competitive world of girls and bikini, yeah. I mean, the Olympia was on only recently. No.
Males too. Okay, thank you.
Although there's certain exercises that I would not like to see you doing.
Is that the Nordic?
I don't want to see you doing hip thrusts
for
your glutes.
I've done a few.
I know. I imagine you might have. We'll have a counselling session after this. We'll talk about that. Greg, you're not thrusting, are you?
No.
No. I'll give you 10 other things to do for your hammies. So I don't have to see you thrust.
But that's right. I listened to a podcast about the Nordics and different ways you can move the hammies.
Yeah, the glutes and the delts are important, but it's a balance thing.
So moving forward, guys, we have to finish this. We're nearly an hour. Where's this all going? Michael, what are your thoughts?
Mainstream, I think, is going to continue to be influenced by the performance sector. So a lot of the technologies that are born out of the high performance are making their way. So we're already there. So we've covered a lot of territory in the last hour, but I think it'll continue to evolve. And as we've said several times now, different ways to engage people to improve their health, their general health and well-being, physically, mentally, all that sort of thing. I think they're all very, very positives. And finding, I think the thing that will become available more and more is access for people. I think that there'll be less, because some people find gyms really intimidating, right?
Yeah.
And so not everyone wants to walk into the local gym because they're not confident. And so if you can team up with some other people who are maybe pretty new to the environment, and you can go into a foreign environment and do a workout with, make friends and do all that sort of cool stuff, then I think that will improve compliance and uptake, and the knock-on effect will be better outcomes for the health and fitness sector, but also for the health sector to remove, you know, chronic disease and all the stuff that, you know, continues to evolve, metabolic disease and obesity, and, you know, we got plenty of issues in the health sector.
Yeah.
So, and if we can engage with some smart wearables, whatever it might be, and people love a gadget, right? So there's never going to be a doubt that there'll be more and more gadgets.
Yeah.
I think it's access. I think there'll be increased access for everybody as we move forward.
And Dan, the good thing out of this, and according to Lifetime's research, 75% of customers who engage trainers do it because they love the relationship with the human.
And that is actually another factor, really good one to finish on. You, and this probably goes back to me and Macca right from the very start when we started this conversation, you stick to people that you sort of gel with and that you want to work with. And I know for a fact that all the people, doesn't matter if it's a crappy gym on the side of the street, if there's a good trainer, I'll come back because they feel comfortable. So it's, again, making it accessible for all the masses out there. Your gadgets are great. Technology is going to trickle down from the high elite coming into the masses. But there's a really big thing now coming through on training trainers, not just to be trainers, but to be personalities and being able to read people's behaviors, because that's a really important thing. Yeah,
that's another whole podcast, I think, around the education.
I think that's a really important podcast we should do.
Yeah, because turnover of trainers is enormous.
Mate, it's massive.
And that comes down to how they're trained and their suitability for the sector. And it's all about interpersonal skills and developing that rapport with people and being able to communicate and finding that niche with an individual. So what makes them tick? Why are they here? What do they want to achieve? And then
you could find a trainer that doesn't have a personality, or you could find a great personality and make them a great trainer.
Yeah, it's good.
That's probably a good note to drop off on.
Cool.
Big one, boys. Thanks for coming in. I really appreciate it. Awesome. We've been talking about you two coming in and having a chat. I'm glad we touched a bit of football.
The A-team in the house.
A-team.
Look forward to Nate making his comments.
Oh.
I'm going to send that straight to him.
That's it from Body Science HQ, the place of fit, happy and healthy. Catch you next week.
Today's podcast was brought to you by our partners in Fit, Happy and Healthy, ASN, Nutrition Warehouse, DY Discount Vitamins, Fat Burners Only, Evelyn Fay, Mr. Supplement, or find a retailer online at bodyscience.com.au/retailers.